Sattva,
worship,
Paramishchinam,
Supreme Personality of Godhead,
Sadguna,
for the qualities of the Lord,
Asraya,
connected with,
Bhaktya,
by devotional service,
Bhajaniya,
worshipable,
Padambujam,
lotus feet. Translation, my dear mother, I therefore advise that you take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for his lotus feet are worth worshipping. Accept this with all devotion and love, for thus you can be situated in transcendental devotional service. Purport, the word Paramesthinam is sometimes used in connection with Brahma. Paramesthi means the Supreme Person. As Brahma is the Supreme Person within this universe, Krishna is the Supreme Personality in the spiritual world. Lord Kapila Dev advises his mother that she should take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, because it is worthwhile. Taking shelter of demigods, even those in the highest positions like Brahma and Shiva, is not advised herein. One should take shelter of the Supreme Godhead. Sarva Bhavena means in loving ecstasy. Bhava is the preliminary stage of elevation before the attainment of pure love of Godhead. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita, Buddha Bhava Samanvata. One who has attained the stage of Bhava can accept the lotus feet of Lord Krishna as worshipable. This is also advised here by Lord Kabiladev to his mother. Also significant in this verse is the phrase Tad Gun Asraya Bhaktya. This means that discharging devotional service unto Krishna is transcendental, it is not a material activity. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Those who engage in devotional service are accepted to be situated in the spiritual kingdom. Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, they at once become situated in the transcendental kingdom. Devotional service and full Krishna consciousness is the only means for attaining the highest perfection of life of the human being. This is recommended here by Lord Kapila to his mother. Bhakti is therefore nirguna, free from all tinges of material qualities. Although the discharge of devotional service appears to be like material activities, it is never saguna, or contaminated by material qualities. Tad guna asraya means that Lord Krishna's transcendental qualities are so sublime, there is no need to divert one's attention to any other activities. His behavior with the devotees is so exalted that a devotee need not try to divert his attention to any other worship. It is said that the demonic Putana came to kill Krishna by poisoning him, but because Krishna was pleased to suck her breast, she was given the same position as his mother. Devotees pray, therefore, that if a demon who wanted to kill Krishna gets such an exalted position, why should they go to anyone other than Krishna for their worshipful attachment? There are two kinds of religious activities, one for material advancement, the other for spiritual advancement. By taking shelter under the lotus feet of Krishna, one is endowed with both kinds of prosperity, material and spiritual. Why, then, should one go to any demigod? Translation, my dear mother, I therefore advise that you take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for his lotus feet are worth worshipping. Accept this with all devotion and love, for thus you can be situated in transcendental devotional service. So this is a very conclusive verse, and we will see in the purport that Srila Prabhupada also has given a very decisive conclusion. As we know, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the final word in all spiritual literature. And what is the conclusion? The conclusion is that we should worship Krishna, no devata, and not even any other form of the Lord, just Krishna, because he is Swayam Bhagavan. And we should not perform any other activity, even though those activities may be mentioned in scripture. Of course, we shouldn't do the unscriptural activities, but even the scriptural activities we don't do. So we have the activities of karma and jnana and yoga. mentioned in the scriptures. Even those we shouldn't do. So sometimes we may get a little confused, especially because even the Bhagavad Gita talks about these things. And we'll see in Bhagavad Gita also this takes place. For instance, we have a conversation between Krishna and Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna discusses jnana and karma for 6 chapters. And then finally gets to bhakti on chapter 7. And then he goes back to jnana again in chapter 13, 14, up to 18 again. So we may get a little confused by all of this. Similarly, we'll find even Kapila does the same thing. The teachings of Kapila begin halfway through the third canto of Bhagavatam. First there is the story of Kapila, just how he was born, etc., and how Devahuti was there with Kardama Muni, etc., and then Kapila was born. That goes on for 4 chapters. And then when Kapila begins teaching Devahuti, we get all of these teachings. But what do we get? We get bhakti in chapter 25, then we get jnana in chapter 26, and liberation according to jnana in chapter 27. We get Astanga Yoga in chapter 28. Whole chapters are dedicated to these subject matters. And then we get bhaktis in the gunas, like tamagun bhakti and rajagun bhakti and sattvagun bhakti, and also pure bhakti in chapter 29. So we get a mixture of things, just as Krishna presented to Arjuna, a mixture of things, karma, jnana, Astanga Yoga, bhakti yoga. So we get, Kapila does the same thing. We'll see the same thing taking place at the end of the Bhagavatam, where Krishna instructs Uddhava, his dearmost devotee. And again, we'll find karma yoga, jnana yoga, astanga yoga, and bhakti yoga. Everything is mentioned. But we should not be confused, because we should see the conclusion. This verse actually is the conclusion. So after all speaking all that, this is what actually, this is the actual conclusion of everything. So, after that, after doing the bona fide processes, then Kapila Dev goes on to speak of the unbona fide things, that is, people that don't follow even karma yoga. And then we get tamagun and rajagun, and then finally we get a little rules and regulations in chapter 32 with the introduction of karma yoga again. And so this verse here actually comes after all of that description. We get the final conclusion with this verse after discussing all the karma yoga up until this point. And then we get this verse in which Kapila says, don't do any of this, karma yoga or jnana yoga or astanga yoga. Just do bhakti yoga. So, for instance, we get in chapter 30, we get this whole description of what happens when you don't follow anything. That is, not even varnashram and karma yoga. If you don't follow that, then you just end up in a pretty bad mess. End up like that. So then the next chapter describes what happens when you go into that position, you end up in a hellish position, and you get all these awful punishments by the servants of Yamaraj. Whole chapter dedicated to that. And then you get born as an animal, and later you come back to as a human being. Eventually you get into the human being species again. And then it describes in chapter 31 how you get born, you know, you're in the womb and you come out of the womb. And then by bad association you fall into the same problems again. Commit the sinful activities, go back to hellish existence, go get punished and come back again. So this is the general tendency of people in the material world. So karma yoga is there to help such people. So therefore chapter 32, that's the present chapter that we're reading here, this discusses don't fall into that hellish position. We should get out of that position at least. So one choice is to do karma yoga. Okay? So the strategy of the scriptures is let us start out gradually. So we'll give them their enjoyment. They want to enjoy. They don't want to follow any rules, so they go to hell. So we'll do something better than that. We'll give them the enjoyment, but we'll encourage them to follow some rules and regulations, but still lure them with that enjoyment. Right? So therefore, there's promises of Svargaloka and things like that. And they worship devatas, and as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, if you worship devatas, you get quick results. So they worship devatas, and they get nice results. The problem, of course, is that those punyas are exhausted, and they fall back down to the earth, and they have to go back up and do some more. But at least it's let's say, preferable. Yeah? You get a nice comforts of life. So, and you don't prefer that to that, definitely. So, we should, this is a way in which the Vedas and the sages have created a strategy to encourage people to follow some rules and regulations. So they start them out with, you know, karma yoga and varnashram and things like that. And even if you're in the lowest category, you simply follow those rules. You can't think too much and you're a sudra or whatever. You just follow the rules. Yeah? And there's not so many rules for the sudra. You follow those rules, then you don't go to hell. At least you gradually elevate through the gunas and eventually get to sattva guna, and then you can go to svarga loka. Yeah? So this is the strategy for the people, you know, in the gunas, tamoguna and rajaguna. Yeah? And then when you get the sattva guna, then you can do jnana. You can understand you're not the body. I'm something different from the body. You go to the scriptures and you understand I'm spirit, soul, I'm atma. Huh? So this is the level of jnana, sattva guna. This is described in the 11th canto where Krishna tells Uddhava that he goes through all the gunas and different things in different gunas. And there he says, you know, karma yoga is in rajaguna and tamaguna, and jnana is in sattva guna. So it's a sattva-gun sadhana. So, in karma yoga itself, there's also a prescription for sattva-gun. After you do your, you know, sakkama karma yoga with all sorts of desires, and you follow rules and regulations, and you get those desires fulfilled, the hope is that eventually you become less attached to those material objects. Yeah? And you continue to follow the rules. So then you come to the level of nishkama karma yoga. This is also described in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna describes the level of, you know, sakkama karma and nishkama karma yoga. So this means one elevates through tamagun and rajagun to sattvagun. Sattvagun means less material attachments. One gets enjoyment from detachment. And one has a tendency for knowledge. That means we understand we're not the material body. So that is the symptom of sattva-guna. So we go from sakkama karma yoga to nishkama karma yoga. So these two things are described in this chapter. Previously there was a discussion of the nishkama karma yoga. People, they do this and they go to Brahmaloka, actually. If you do this nishkama karma yoga, you end up in Brahmaloka. And then it describes how at the end of Brahma's life, you can even get liberation if you're very, very lucky. So this is another alternative. Instead of doing sakkama karma yoga, we do nishkama karma yoga, and we even get liberation. So this way, artha, dharma, karma, and moksha are covered here. But, of course, superior to that is the jnana, because by jnana, one completely gives up all of the duties of karma yoga and simply concentrate on understanding we are not the body, we are atma, and we one strives for liberation. So that's even better than this, where you may go to Brahmaloka, you may get Sayujya or Vaikuntha, but you can also fall down back into the material world. So those who are in jnana are definitely trying to get out of the material world. Huh? So we have all of these things discussed by Kapiladev. Two types of karma yoga, jnana yoga, and astanga yoga, and bhakti yoga. He's discussed that also. So we should not get confused and think that, well, we can follow any of these processes and get result. No, this is not true. They're actually meant as a progression to follow. From karma yoga, we go to jnana yoga, to astanga yoga, and then to bhakti yoga. So at least you would have to follow that process. But even that is rejected. So Kapiladev does not recommend this process to Devahuti. She asked the question, how do I get out of this material world? And this is she discussed all of this. Do the karma yoga, do the jnana, do the astanga yoga. And then he comes back. This is the final conclusion. This is the end of chapter 32, and then chapter 33 again is all bhakti yoga. And then he concludes, bhakti yoga, chant the name of the Lord. That's how he concludes. So all of these things he discusses, but
actually he rejects them all. So why do we discuss all these things and then reject them? Why does he do that? Just as Krishna also discusses karma again, astanga yoga, then bhakti yoga, then he rejects everything. He says, sarva dharma parijaya mamekam saranam braja. So we can make it much simpler by just having bhakti yoga. Same here. He discusses all of these things, then he comes back just to bhakti yoga. So, as I said, these things are discussed because they are scriptural, and this is the gradual process. But we should not become confused by this. And therefore, at the beginning of Bhagavatam, we have the story of Narada Muni speaking to Vedavyas. Vedavyas wrote works, Puranas, with all Rajagun, Tamagun, Sattvagun things in it. And then Narada Muni says, nonsense, don't do that. People of Kali Yuga will get confused. They are too lazy. They will get stuck. You tell them, do your duties in Tamagun or Rajagun. They'll get stuck there. They won't go any further. So you cannot recommend this in Kali Yuga especially. Just tell them bhakti only. One process only, not all these other processes. Even if you're in the gunas, bhakti is the process. The Bhagavatam points out particularly the supreme nature of bhakti here, and of course in other teachings also. So bhakti is independent of everything, and everything else is dependent on bhakti, other processes. So in other words, bhakti does not depend on karma, jnana, or yoga for its success. But jnana, karma, and yoga depend on bhakti for their success. So we may not think, how's that? That's true. How can that be true? Because we always think it's separate. But according to our acharyas, no. Even karma yoga cannot be successful unless there's a little bit of bhakti. Why? Because it's the Lord that recommends this process. If you reject the Lord, how he can get his mercy to succeed even in karma yoga? So all of these processes, even if you want liberation, you need a little bhakti. So, the whole principle of Bhagavatam is Krishna is the source of everything. And bhakti is the source of all the other processes. Everything else is dependent upon those other processes. So everything comes from Krishna. So nothing is separate from Krishna. Everything gets its life from Krishna and bhakti. So you cannot separate all these other processes and do them separately. But bhakti is directly concerned with Krishna and only Krishna. You can separate that from everything else, from tapas, yoga, jnana, ashrama, varna, yajna, vedas, all that. You can separate bhakti completely and there's no problem. There's no sin incurred if we reject everything else and just do bhakti, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. There's no sin. You reject everything, you do bhakti, no problem. So, as Prabhupada mentioned in the purport, bhakti is beyond the gunas. Everything else is in the gunas. So we have tamoguna, rajaguna, sattvaguna. And then we have these processes, sakama karma yoga, nishkama karma yoga, jnana, and astanga yoga, all in the gunas. But, of course, we know sattvaguna is better than tamoguna and rajaguna. So therefore, the jnana and the astanga yoga are superior to the karma yoga, and nishkama karma yoga is superior to sakama karma yoga. So there's a hierarchy here. But that's not complete. You're still in the material world. You're only in sattvaguna. If you want to get out of the material world, you have to do something nirguna. If you just do jnana, jnana is only in sattvaguna. It's not transcendental in itself. It is not nirguna. How can something in the gunas get you beyond the gunas, even to this point of liberation, impersonal liberation? You cannot do it, because it's only sattvaguna. So all of these processes actually are a gradual process of development, plus they are all dependent on bhakti for their success. Yeah? So karma yoga cannot give even svargaloka without recognition of Vishnu. And jnana cannot be successful unless there's recognition of the Supreme Lord. We have famous verse, those people who neglect the lotus feet of the Lord fall down from liberation. They cannot get it. They cannot attain that liberation because they reject the Lord. So all of these other processes are dependent on bhakti. So if you do karma yoga, then there's a little bhakti, and this thing will have, we'll see the blue part is the non-bhakti portion, and the pink part is the bhakti portion. A little bit of bhakti there. We don't call it bhakti because it's mainly something else, karma yoga, in this case. So you do karma yoga, you have to recognize Vishnu. He has to be worshipped in all your ceremonies, at least. He may not be a prominent portion, but at least he's recognized as supreme. And you get Svargaloka. And there's no recognition of no bhakti there at all, nothing. You don't even get the Svargaloka. Or you go for liberation. If you have that recognition of the Lord, you can get your liberation. If you don't recognize the Lord, or you offend him and say Krishna has a material body, you don't even get liberation. You don't get the mercy of the Lord. In other words, it is the Lord who is the source of jnana, tapa, all these things. And if you don't get his mercy, you cannot get the result. So you cannot even get liberation from jnana if you neglect the Lord. Yeah? So even if you do these processes, they're not complete. Karma yoga, you're still in the material world. You can go from Svargaloka to Brahmaloka. That's it. And you fall back down and do some more karmas and go around like that. If you do jnana and you do a little bhakti, yes, you can get liberation, get out of your material body. That's as far as you get. Out of the material body. Yeah? But if you do bhakti without any other process, you get the spiritual world, you develop your relationship with Krishna and Rasa. So that is why we recommend this process, bhakti, and not the other processes. That's why Kapiladev says this, because the result is different. It's not the same result from all these different processes. It's the final result. Now, if we do bhakti, we can also mix it a little bit. So we got a little bit of karma yoga here in the corner here. A little bit of karma, we've still got some material desires left. We can do that type of bhakti. Krishna accepts that. Bhagavad Gita, four types of people surrender to Krishna. People that have material desires, people that want to get out of the material, people that are suffering. He accepts all those people. Yeah. They're different from those who are doing karma or jnana because it's mostly bhakti, but they have that little bit of tinge of other desires. They're not any abhilasha to shunya. You got a little covering there. So they get better than the karmis or the jnanis. Yeah? The karmi goes to Svargaloka or Brahmaloka. So what does the karma Mr. Bhakta get? He must get better than that. So yes, he does. He can actually get Sarupya, Salokya, and Sarsti in the spiritual world. That much he can get. Yeah? And what about the Gyan Mr. Bhakta? He's a little bit of Gyan mixed with his Bhakti. A little bit of desire to escape from the material world and get peace and all that. He gets more than the Gyani gets. The Gyani has mostly Gyana and a little bit of Bhakti. He gets liberation, impersonal liberation, merged in Brahman, Sayuja. One who has bhakti with a little bit of jnana must go beyond that. So he also goes to the spiritual world, develops a little relationship with the Lord in Shantarasa. Why Shantarasa? Because he wants to be peaceful. That jnana mixture is there in his bhakti, so he wants peace. Yeah? So he gets that in the spiritual world. Yeah? This type of person will not appreciate the gopis. Yeah? The gopis are not peaceful at all. They're always in anxiety. Where is Krishna? If they're separated from Krishna for 1 second, they're disturbed. Yeah? They pray that, you know, Brahma made fault because he gave us eyelids, and when we blink our eyelids, we cannot see Krishna for a second. So they curse Brahma. Yeah? Because that 1 second when the eyelid closes and they cannot see Krishna causes separation, and they become very disturbed. So the devotees of the spiritual world are subject to that, especially as you go higher and higher in the rasas. So the people that want to be peaceful will not be very attracted to that. Huh? So they're very content with this Shantarasa, very peaceful relationship in the spiritual world, like that. So this is what happens when you get mixed bhakti. It's better than karma yoga, jnana yoga, stanga yoga with a little bhakti. And of course, if you just do without bhakti, you get nothing. If you do karma, jnana, and stanga yoga with bhakti, you get your results to some degree. But if you do this, you get better. But if you do all bhakti and no mixture, then we get these developed relationships with the Supreme Lord, which are very satisfying. So this is what we mean by bhakti. And this is what is meant here, sarva-bhavena bhajasva. You worship the Supreme Lord with all bhava. All love. So this is what the love is here.
Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya.
But to do that, it has to be Sudha. Gonna have the mixture. So that is why at the beginning of Nectar Devotion, Rupa Goswami, he defines bhakti, and no other desire. Not covered by karma, gyan, yoga, or anything else. No other desire except the desire to please Krishna. That is Sudha Bhakti. So by that sadhana, then we attain prema and all of the relationships. Satya, Satya, and Vatsalya, and Madhurya. So, therefore, that is all, after describing all those different things and all those different processes, then we come to this verse. Finally, he says, just do this. Just surrender to the Lord and do bhakti. So that is the ultimate conclusion of everything. Very good. Then, I'll just go a little bit after this in the same chapter. This is a very interesting phenomenon that takes place here. There's this verse, which is very important because it shows the broad nature of our philosophy, and it explains it also. Just as one object, the substrate of many qualities, is perceived by the various senses in various ways, so Bhagavan is perceived variously by various scriptural practices. So according to your desire and your practice, you can see the Lord, but you'll see him a little differently. Same Lord, but slightly differently. In other words, it's not false. We don't get false realization, but the realization will be different according to how we worship the Lord, the particular process that we follow. So it's not that we disagree that other worship is not the Lord, but it may not be the best worship, that's all. So a nice example is given. We have object like milk, and then we have our various senses. So with the eye, we can look at milk and we get a certain knowledge of the milk. Okay, it's white. And if we taste it with the tongue, we can say, ah, it's sweet. Touch it, it's cool. By the nose, it's got some fragrance to it. So we got, each sense has some knowledge of milk. But of course, each of these things in itself is not milk. So many things are white, not just milk. But the eye will see, okay, white, milk. But there's other things also there. So, if we combine it together, from the tongue and the eye and the ear and all this, and touch through the mind, then we can get a complete conception of milk. Yeah, we get all the qualities combined together through the mind. Yeah? But individually, no. We get some partial realization of the object milk. Yeah? Like that. So we can. So the Lord is like that also. And we can perceive him partially by one particular process, like the eye perceives the whiteness of the milk. So by karma yoga, we can perceive the Lord as giver of material results. Let's go to Svarga Loka and enjoy. Or by jnana, we do jnana. Then we perceive the Lord as impersonal Brahman, some substance or something with no form and no qualities, no activities, very peaceful. And no material karma. No variation of dualities, etc. So by one portion of the Lord, we get a certain quality of the Lord manifest. So one type of sadhana will reveal a certain amount of quality of the Lord. But we obviously, it's not perfect. Just like whiteness of milk is not the truth about milk. It's a little bit of truth, but not the whole thing. So like this, by different processes, we can understand a little bit of the quality of the Lord. We can appreciate something of the Lord. So if we realize Bhagavan, then Bhagavan is the source of everything. So we can get everything. As Prabhupada says in the report here, whatever you can get from karma and jnana and yoga, you can get from bhakti also, but you get more. So, by bhakti, by this particular process, bhakti, we realize Bhagavan, and then we can realize everything. So just as the mind realizes all the different qualities together from all the different senses. So by bhakti, we realize the Lord, and we realize the Lord perfectly, not just part of the Lord, this aspect of the Lord, that aspect of the Lord. We can realize all of the Lord. So that is the significance of bhakti. Huh? So the only problem would be, well, bhakti is the highest process, so I'm not qualified for that, so I'll have to follow, you know, I'm in tamagun, so I have to follow tamagun process. That is, I'll start with karma yoga and be a sudra and work my way up and become a brahmin first, and then I can be qualified, then get to jnana, then do yoga, and then do bhakti. Then we'll think like that. But no, bhakti is open to everyone. So that's mentioned actually in the last chapter. Where the name is glorified, because even if the chandala, the fallen person who's not in the varnashram system, not even a sudra, chants the name of the Lord once, he surpasses everyone in the varnashram system. So in other words, bhakti has the capacity to purify anyone in any guna. So we don't have to go through a gradual process of purification. Bhakti itself will do everything, from the beginning to the end. So it surpasses all other processes. So whatever you will accomplish by karma, as Prabhupada says in the purport, if you want the material things, yes, bhakti also gives that. So whatever karma yoga gives, bhakti gives that also. And we see examples like Dhruva. He wanted a kingdom greater than his father's kingdom or his grandfather's kingdom. He got it. Lord gave it to him, even though he didn't want it afterwards. He got that. And we see in the Bhagavatam examples of many kings like Ambarish. They ruled the whole world. Or Yudhisthira ruled the whole world. So they had everything. So by bhakti one can get all material results, and one can go beyond the material world. One escapes from the material world. If we develop our bhakti to perfection, we go for the material world. We don't come back. So liberation is automatically included in developing our relationship with the Supreme Lord. So and of course powers, if you want powers, yes, available for the devotee also. Devotees have much more power than anyone else. Ambarish had power over the Sudarshan Chakra, Vishnu. So therefore everything is available, all results are available through bhakti. But of course the devotee doesn't want these things, Sarsti, Sarupya, Samipya, all these things. He doesn't want even want these things. All he wants to do is serve the Lord. That by definition, that is the nature of bhakti, simply wanting to please the Lord. The result is that the Lord will give things which are not obstacles to that bhakti. And the devotee will accept them if they're not an obstacle. So he will give a kingdom or whatever, as in the case of Dhruva or Yudhisthira Maharaj. He will give things if they're not an obstacle. But the main element is bhakti. So by the process of bhakti, and only bhakti, without having to do anything else, even if we're the most unqualified, we can get the highest result. And it includes everything else, plus we get much more than that. So that is why Kapila Dev here says, just do bhakti yoga. You don't have to do anything else. You don't have to depend on anything else. You can do it exclusively. You don't have to mix it with other processes. You just do bhakti, and you get perfection. Whatever you need from karma yoga or jnana yoga or astanga yoga, you get, but you get much more than that. And well, of course, what is that? That is the highest satisfaction. The atma becomes satisfied, supersedity. What is that satisfaction? We get bliss. Where does the bliss arise from? From that relationship with the Supreme Lord, which we call rasa. And as I said, that's what happens. We get prema, and you get these various relationships with the Supreme Lord. So this is the final result. So by the various processes, you can get various things, but we shouldn't think they're all equal. No. They're only partial, like the whiteness of the milk or the fragrance of the milk. You get these other things. So we're interested in Bhagavan. But the point of Srimad Bhagavatam is not just Bhagavan, but Swayam Bhagavan. So we have so many forms of Bhagavan, but then the ultimate form is Krishna. He is Swayam Bhagavan. So this is the form which we concentrate on. So we don't want to just worship the Lord, we worship Bhagavan. Not only do we worship Bhagavan, but we worship Swayam Bhagavan, Krishna. Why? Because Krishna is the full manifestation of all the qualities of Bhagavan, whereas all the others are also partial. So according to the worship, you get the result. If you worship Nrsimhadeva, you get Nrsimhadeva and that amount of qualities. If you worship Rama, then that amount of qualities you'll realize. And if you worship Krishna, you get the full spectrum of qualities. Yeah? So at the beginning of Nectar Devotion, first verse says, Krishna is Akila Rasa Mrita Murti. He is the very form of all rasas, complete. Whereas the others are not. Other forms of God are there. They have it, but they don't manifest it in that particular form. If you choose to worship that form, you'll realize to that degree. Okay? But if you worship Krishna, then you get the full manifestations. And of course, even there's a hitch there, because according to the rasa you develop and according to the mood you develop, there's also various degrees there up until Madhurya rasa. So that is why we have the Madhurya rasa at the top. So that's what we worship in our temple, Radha and Krishna. So this is the full manifestation of all the rasa, all the 12 rasas. So that is our, this is the recommendation of Srimad Bhagavatam ultimately. And of course, the whole Gaudiya Sampradaya, Lord Chaitanya has emphasized this also.
Okay.
Hare Krishna.
It's interesting to note that Kapil Dev gave Sankhya philosophy. Mm-hmm. And when he departed, Devahuti Mata, she got rid of all her opulence and everything, became very simple and meditated on the Lord. But if you compare Yashoda Mata, because Krishna is full of bhakti ras, so when he left, she was devastated. Same with Sachi Ma, she's another mother. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left, she was also lamenting. So it's interesting to note which incarnation gives you what. Although he's concluding in bhakti, but mainly he was giving Sankhya. So even Kardama Muni, receiving Kapil Dev as his son, but he went, took sannyas. So instead of staying with the Lord, he actually went away. So there's a danger that when the Lord is born in your family, where there's bhakti, there's so strong attachment that there's tears and devastation if the Lord goes anywhere. Whereas if Gyan is there, even if he's born in your family, you can afford to go away and say, I'm cool.
We'll also we'll see that even in the case of Krishna, because Vasudeva and Devaki were separated from Krishna for so long, they did not go through the same symptoms as the people of Raja.
Yeah.
When Uddhava came back, he was astonished, and he says, these people of Raja are superior to us, even though we are the mother and father and the family of Krishna, and they only adopted him. They are the real devotees, because a few moments separation, they're devastated. If we are sitting here in Mathura for many, many years and Krishna's there, we didn't do this. But they went through these extraordinary symptoms just for the few moments of separation. So that shows the strength of their bhakti. Why is it different? Because they also realize him as God. So their Madhurya was mixed with Aishwarya. So the relationship was weakened simply by that. So that is why Krishna and Vrindavan is considered superior to the realization of Krishna and Mathura or Dwarka. Because that strength of that love is much higher because of the lack of regard as Supreme Lord.
Because Devahuti Mata kept addressing Kapil Dev as the Supreme Lord, Lord. Whereas Yashoda Mata
never
had to stick up.
So
you steal butter again, I'll beat you up. And Sachi Mata similarly did that.
Thank you, Maharaj. On the one hand, we hear this Vedic statement that, and Prabhupada used to say, unless one has even a tinge of material desire, he cannot go back to Godhead. Mm-hmm. But in your lecture, and apparently in this section of the Bhagavatam, there's praman to the effect that, like you said, even if one does have tinges of desire mixed with bhakti, there are liberations such as Talishti and Talokya.
I'll explain that. Yeah, so a person may have this mixed bhakti, karma, Mr. Bhakti, or Gyan, Mr. Bhakti, so there's some tinge there of karma and whatever. When he gets qualified, when the Lord has mercy, of course, he goes to the spiritual world, the Lord does not allow any desires there. So those desires, gross desires, are not there. But that desire that he had when he was here, that material, slight material desire, weakens the bhakti, tinges that bhakti to some degree. So the bhakti that he has in the spiritual world is different from those who have Suddha bhakti because of that. Doesn't mean he has material, still has sakama up there. No. He doesn't have any more karma or any mixture. But that bhakti was mixed and therefore it was diluted. So his relationship with the Lord is diluted in the spiritual world. That's all it means. It doesn't mean he's still got jnana and karma and gunas in the spiritual world.
Thank you.
Of course, if he gets association with pure devotion, then he can give up that jnana or mixture or whatever. As the case of Sukadev, he was jnani. He was Atmarama. But when he heard the Bhagavatam, then he developed attraction for Krishna and heard from Vyasadeva. Then he became the highest devotee. No more jnana, no more mixture of jnana at all. So it's possible to remove that mixture also by association.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. Great class. When you're talking about the worshiping the forms of the Lord, are Lord Chaitanya and Krishna synonymous?
Yeah.
Okay.
Swami Bhagavan.
And also, I have another question that's come up a few times in different classes. And if an individual has a swarup, an eternal relationship with the personality of Godhead,
mm-hmm.
Is there a way to change one's rasa? Can one move up to Madhurya rasa, or is one always, you know, is my eternal position if I'm a stone in the spiritual world, or if I'm even a worshiper of Vishnu form in Vaikuntha, am I eternally stuck there, or how does that work?
Well, it's not really explained anywhere, but there's a little problem if we do jump around in the spiritual world. Eventually everyone would jump around and go up to Krishna and everywhere else would be vacant or something, you know, so there's a problem there. So it looks like they don't really jump around. Now, what the acharya says, generally according to your sadhana, you get the result. So as accordingly as you surrender unto me, I respond to you. So if you choose a certain deity and worship in that form, then you go to that you perfect yourself and go to that particular deity. So if you worship Rama, you go to Rama. You worship Krishna, you go to Krishna. That's why we worship Krishna in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, not others. We mainly worship Krishna, so go to Krishna. Yeah? So if you worship Krishna and suddenly you end up on another planet with Nrsimhadeva, you say, how did I get here? So it wouldn't be quite proper. So the Lord responds according to your worship. So generally in sadhana, we go up and we concentrate on a particular deity, particular type of mood and whatever, particular relationship, and then we get perfection through bhava and prema, and then that's what we get in the spiritual world. Of course, we can ask, how do we choose here? Do we say our individual preference plus the Lord's mercy or whatever?
I heard a tape years ago where Prabhupada answered that question, and he said, if Krishna wants, he can change your rasa.
Yeah. Oh, Krishna can do anything. Yeah.
I'm going to say, but that's how we answer that particular question.
Lokana Swami.
You're explaining, your show showed that the Jnana Mishras, they attain Salokya, Samipya, Sarastri. You had put that into one category, and then for Shuddha Bhaktas, you had Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya.
Yeah.
I thought, isn't Samipya means just next to Krishna? Isn't these Sakhas, aren't they, you haven't attained Samipya?
I didn't put Samipya in there. It was Sarsti, Sarupya, Salokya.
But are those three things are different? And
because that's for pure bhakti. Of course, we can find even for persons who do, let's say, like the yogis or the sages in the spiritual world, they do get a little close, but still they're distant in one sense, and they're shantarasa still. So they may have a little samipya, but may not be constant. Or those who are, again, Mr. Bhaktas when they get perfection or whatever. Yeah. Anyway, what was your question? Did that answer the question or not?
Yeah, the Swarupya, one has attained Swarupya Mukti.
Yeah, yeah.
So he may be one of the Sakhas who looks like Krishna in the same swarup as form as the Lord, or Buddha, or in Shukdev Goswami, their swarup is like that of Krishna, the complexion and...
Oh yeah, that's a little bit different sarupya. I think this, when we say sarupya here, that the karma Mr. Bhaktis will get sarupya, they get a general form. So generally they're not going to even go as far as Krishna. They'll get Vaikuntha, and in Vaikuntha they can get that sarupya in the sense of a forearm form. And they can get big palaces and things like this up in Vaikuntha, and lots of sharshti, you know, powers and that. But they don't see the Lord. They don't meet the Lord. They meditate on the Lord and they're happy with that. So that very distant relationship, that's what the karma Mr. Bhaktas would get. And Gan Mr. Bhaktas, a little slightly higher than that, but Shantarasa, slight relationship, but very distant. So the reason for that is that they must get higher than the Ganis who get mere liberation and don't go to Vaikuntha. But they must get less than the pure Bhaktas who get a positive relationship with the Lord. And so in other words, they get a weak relationship with the Lord in the spiritual world, but higher than the impersonalists and whatever, because they did the bhakti.
Extension of Krishnadas Kaviraj's question, can we change rasa? I read it somewhere that if you're attached to pure Krishna Bhakti, you go to Golok Vrindavan, and if you're attached to Lord Chaitanya, you go to Svetadvip. But if you love both of them, you are in each of those lokas.
Yeah.
So there's a split there, and we can split nine times in spiritual world.
Okay. Well, actually, if you have a spiritual body, you can do extraordinary things. Because we see that Krishna is in this universe when he comes, but then he's in another universe, and he also takes his associates with him. So the associates all spread all throughout the whole universe is where Krishna and other avatars are having their pastimes. The associates are there. And it gets simultaneous in the spiritual world.
Yeah.
So even the associates of the Lord also develop that tendency to have multiple bodies, so to speak, expansions of their bodies. It's not a problem. It's all arranged by Krishna. In fact, Vishwan Chakravarti explains that Krishna came back after 3 months after he left Mathura, because he promised the gopis he would come back, and he promised Nanda Maharaj, I'll come back. So he did come back. There could be no doubt that he would fulfill the promise of his greatest devotees, what to speak of others. And Krishna says he never breaks his promise, so he must have come back. But we don't see it, that's all. So he went back. So what we see is another form in separation for so many years before he went back later. So there were two forms of Brajavasis. In separation, and they remain in separation. And when he went back after 3 months, then they're all with him again, happy. So there were two forms of Brajavasis. Nanda and Yasoda, everybody in two forms there. No problem. Krishna's poet, he can do that. Why did you get it?
I'm sorry, Mark. Before asking my question, I also wanted to express my gratitude for hearing the superiority of Shuddha Bhakti so nicely. One small question. I was under the impression that when you have some of the terminology used, or even in the graphics, when you have a Jnana Yoga or Karma Yoga without Bhakti, small tinge, I thought specifically that would be Karma, not Karma Yoga, because the Yoga is what connects, or the small portion of Bhakti. Am I wrong in that?
Well, I guess so. We can say it's not real Karma Yoga, because it doesn't,
karma.
Because you don't get any results from it, so yeah. Useless Karma Yoga.
And the same with Jnana. So yeah. that helps, could help in, so there not being any confusion.
True.
As you started the class out.
But then again, we should understand that what we normally see as the Jnani actually is not a Jnani, because they say the form of the Lord is material, therefore they're aparadis. Therefore, there's no bhakti there at all. Even if they do worship the Lord, they're worshiping as a demigod. So that's aparad. So therefore, they're not doing bhakti at all. Therefore, they don't get liberation. So it's not real gyan even.
Thank you.
Madhaji back there has a question. Someone went way in the back there.
Oh,
want to reiterate the thanks, Maharaj, for this nice explanation, which made me think, it should make all of us think, as a society, whether we are actually developing all our practices in the mode of pure bhakti, or we are mixing so much with it that sometimes it seems for those who are interested in bhakti that there's hardly any space left to exist. However, my question is a simple one, different. You explained that Ashtanga Yoga and Jnana Yoga are in the mode of goodness. So I wanted to ask, the practices you meant are in goodness because the realization obtained by Jnana Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga is on a transcendental platform, so is that due again to the mixture with some bhakti, or how are these processes, how did you categorize them in goodness with the result in transcendence?
Oh, well, if we look in the 11th canto there, Krishna speaks to Uddhava and he talks about the gunas, so there he definitely mentions that jnana is in sattva-gun. So in other words, that's the sadhana, that is your study of shastra and Vedanta, and your renunciation, your sense control, and development of good qualities, and you know, being peaceful all the time. This is all sattva-gun. Huh? And the same with yoga, with yama, niyama, all this. This is all sattva-gun. So the process is, in itself, is sattva-gun. So in itself, it cannot give you something beyond that. Sattva-gun can only create sattva-gun. It can't go beyond that and create nirguna. And it stays in the gunas. So that is why we need something nirguna. To give you liberation. The result, the desired result of yoga and jnana is nirguna, liberation, beyond the gunas. But that process itself, by itself, cannot give it. That's why there has to be a little bhakti there. So by the mercy of the Lord, he will give them liberation. And the process itself does not do it, but the mercy of the Lord will do it. Because he's beyond the gunas. So, to get the mercy of the Lord, they have to do that little bhakti. So it's also said that the jnani must give up jnana when he goes for liberation. If he doesn't give it up, he's still attached to the sattva-gun things. He must stay in the material world. He must give it up. So he gives up all the jnana. He does not give up the bhakti. That little portion of bhakti remains, and that gives him the liberation. Yeah, I think that's the last question we'll take.
Maharaj, I'm not understanding how karma mishra bhakti gives liberation and how it reconciles with anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma, and how it reconciles with anyabhilashita shunyam.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. You can go to the spiritual. In other words, jnana with a little bhakti gives liberation. So bhakti with a little jnana should give more than liberation. But it should give less than bhakti with no jnana in it at all. So you go to the spiritual world, but you don't quite get the same relationship. That's the logic. Okay, I think we have to end here. Hare Krishna.